Okay, so imagine this. You're being sued for 2 years' rent on an apartment you never even moved into.
Oof, that's rough.
Yeah, it's a wild one, right? And that's exactly what happened in Summer v. Crittle.
Ah, yes, a classic case.
It's a landmark case for sure. And that's what we're diving into today.
Sounds good.
Now, you might be thinking, why should I care about some old case from 1977?
Yeah, why dredge that up?
Well, trust me, this one's a game changer, especially if you're a renter or a landlord. It's all about the duty to mitigate.
Right, the duty to mitigate.
A concept that revolutionized residential leases and still has a major impact on how we rent and live today.
Huge implications, for sure. What's fascinating about Summer v. Crudell is how it forced the courts to really think about this question. Are leases just about property rights? You know, the way they had been thought of for centuries? Or are they becoming more like modern contracts with responsibilities on both sides?
Okay, so let's set the scene. It's 1972, and we have James Crittle.
Haha.
He signs a 2-year lease on an apartment in Hackensack, New Jersey. But then life throws him a curveball. His engagement falls apart, and he's in a tough spot financially. So he does what he thinks is the right thing. He writes to the landlord, Abraham Summer, explaining the situation and surrendering the apartment before even moving in.
Makes sense.
He even offers to forfeit his deposit.
Wow, trying to be responsible.
You'd think Summer would be at least a little understanding, right?
You would think so, right? But that's where it gets really interesting. Summer completely ghosts Crudell,
Oh, wow.
ignores the letter, ignores a potential tenant who inquires about the apartment a few months later, just lets the place sit empty for over a year.
Seriously.
And then he decides to sue Crudell for the entire 2 years' worth of rent.
Talk about adding insult to injury.
Right.
So what happened in court? Did they side with Crudell, who seemed to be acting in good faith?
Well, the trial court did. They ruled in Crudell's favor, saying that Summer had a duty to mitigate his damages.
Okay, so the trial court gets it.
Yeah, they were like, look, he couldn't just let the apartment sit empty and expect to be compensated for the full amount.
Right, he could have at least tried to rent it out.
Exactly. He had to take steps to re-rent it.
That seems pretty straightforward. So that's the end of the story, right?
Well, not quite. The appellate division actually reversed the trial court's decision.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, they sided with Summer. They pointed to this old New Jersey law that basically said landlords could let it rot and still collect rent.
What? So they were allowed to just do nothing.
It was a very traditional view, very property rights focused.
Interesting.
It didn't seem to consider how the nature of leases was changing.
So it went all the way to Supreme Court.
You bet it did. The New Jersey Supreme Court decided to hear this case alongside a similar case, Riverview Realty v. Perozio, to address this very question. Do landlords have a duty to mitigate their damages?
Okay, so big stakes here. The Supreme Court is now grappling with this question that could change everything about renting. What was their decision?
They said, yes, landlords do have a duty to mitigate damages. They can't just ignore a vacant unit and expect to collect rent from a tenant who broke the lease.
Okay, so that's a big deal.
Right. It was a legal curveball. They said landlords must treat vacated units like any other vacant apartment and make reasonable efforts to re-rent them.
Okay, so two big things here. Landlords have to try and relet. And there's this idea of reasonable effort. Can you unpack those a bit more for us?
Sure. This decision was huge. The court was saying that times had changed and clinging to old school property law just didn't make sense in the context of modern leases.
So they were pushing for leases to be seen more like contracts.
Exactly. Both sides have responsibilities. The landlord has to provide a habitable place, the tenant has to pay rent. But if the tenant breaks the agreement, the landlord can't just sit back and watch the damages pile up.
That seems fair. But how did they define reasonable effort? Did they give landlords a specific checklist to follow?
Interestingly, no, they didn't lay out a rigid definition.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's smart because it acknowledges that every situation is different.
Makes sense.
But they did make it clear that landlords can't just go through the motions. They have to genuinely try to find a new tenant.
So, what are some examples of things a landlord should be doing to show they're making a reasonable effort?
Well, advertising the unit is a big one.
Sure.
And not just a for rent sign taped to a window. They should be using appropriate ways to reach potential renters. Online listings, newspaper ads, working with real estate agents, even spreading the word through their own networks. And of course, they can't just reject any applicant without a valid reason, especially if they meet the rental criteria.
So it's not about being picky, it's about finding a suitable replacement.
Exactly. The court was trying to inject some fairness and common sense into the system. That's a big part of why Summer v. Crydel is such a landmark case. It established a new standard for how we view the responsibilities of landlords when a tenant breaks a lease.
This is all super interesting, but I'm already thinking about how this reasonable effort standard plays out in real life. Is there a magic formula? What if a landlord refuses to budge on rent, even if the market has cooled down?
Great questions. And that's exactly what we'll be digging into in part two of our deep dive into Summer v. Crydel. Welcome back to our deep dive into Summer v. Crydel.
It's great to be back.
You know, you left us with a great question last time. Does a landlord refusing to lower the rent, even in a slow market, mean they're not making a reasonable effort to relet?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It really is. This question comes up all the time, and it gets to the heart of what reasonable effort actually means in practice.
It's a tricky balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, landlords should be able to set their own prices.
Of course.
But if they're being completely unreasonable and clinging to some inflated rent, it seems like they're undermining the whole duty to mitigate, right?
Right. You hit the nail on the head. And the courts have really wrestled with this issue.
There's no easy answers.
No easy answers. It often comes down to a very specific analysis of each case. You really have to look at the facts.
So what are some of the things courts look at when trying to figure out if a landlord is being reasonable about their rent expectations?
Well, one of the biggest factors is the overall rental market.
Makes sense.
What are similar units in the same area renting for? Has there been a recent dip in the market? You know, something that might justify a price adjustment?
Right.
Courts will look at those comparable properties to see if the landlord is being realistic.
I can see that. Imagine a landlord stuck in the past, holding on to a rent price from 6 months ago when everyone else has lowered theirs.
Exactly. That probably wouldn't look so good to a court.
Right. It's all about context.
Yeah.
What else do they consider?
Another thing is how long the unit has been vacant.
Okay.
If it's been sitting empty for months and the landlord hasn't had any serious offers, well, that could suggest they need to rethink their pricing strategy.
Interesting. So it's not just about the dollar amount, it's about how that number compares to the market and how long it's been vacant.
You got it. They'll also look at whether the landlord has received any legitimate offers from qualified tenants.
Oh, does that make sense?
You know, if they've had several people who seem interested but then back out when they hear the rent price, that's a pretty strong signal that it might be too high.
Yeah, that makes sense. It sounds like courts are trying to figure out if the landlord is genuinely trying to rent the unit or just being stubborn.
Exactly. Remember, Summer v. Crydel is all about preventing waste.
Right.
If a landlord insists on an unrealistic rent, they're choosing to keep the unit vacant, which doesn't benefit anyone.
So it goes against that whole spirit of the duty to mitigate.
Exactly. The duty to mitigate isn't about just checking boxes. It's about actively trying to find a good tenant.
Right.
And that might mean adjusting rent expectations to fit the reality of the market.
This is where it gets really practical, right?
Absolutely.
Landlords need to understand what they have to do, and renters need to know their rights if they have to break a lease.
Couldn't agree more. It's important for lawyers on both sides to understand how to apply these principles.
So let's get into some of the practical implications of this case. For landlords, what are some key takeaways?
Okay, so for landlords, first and foremost, they need to stay up to date on market conditions.
Stay informed.
Exactly. They can't just set a rent price and assume it's going to stay relevant forever. They need to know what similar units are renting for and be willing to adjust their expectations if necessary.
So doing their homework is essential.
Absolutely. Another important thing is documentation.
Receipts.
Keep records of all advertisements showing any communication with potential tenants.
Smart.
That documentation can be a lifesaver if a dispute arises, and they need to prove they made a real effort to re-rent the unit.
Makes sense. And what about renters? What should they keep in mind if they need to break a lease?
Well, it's important for renters to understand that breaking a lease can have financial consequences.
Right.
But Summer v. Crydel means those consequences can be lessened if the landlord fulfills their duty to try and re-let the unit. So open communication is key.
Got it.
If you need to move out before the end of your lease, provide your landlord with written notice explaining your reasons. Hopefully they'll be understanding and work with you to find a solution.
So being upfront and proactive.
Exactly. It's also smart for renters to document everything, just like landlords. Keep a record of all communication with your landlord about your departure and keep track of any efforts you make to help find a replacement tenant.
So good communication and documentation are essential for both sides.
Absolutely. Being open and transparent can prevent a lot of misunderstandings and help resolve any disputes that do arise.
This whole deep dive into Summer v. Crydel has been really eye-opening. It's amazing to see how a case from nearly 50 years ago still has such a big impact on the rental market today.
It really shows how powerful legal principles can be. They adapt and evolve to meet the changing needs of society.
Totally. Before Summer v. Criddle, the scales were often tipped in favor of landlords. But this case brought some much-needed balance to the equation.
I agree with that. It's a great reminder that legal doctrines aren't set in stone. They can and should evolve to reflect what's fair and what makes sense in the real world.
And that's why it's still so relevant today. It set a precedent that continues to shape the rights and responsibilities of both landlords and tenants.
It's a powerful example of how legal principles can have a real tangible impact on people's lives.
Right.
The duty to mitigate encourages landlords to keep their units occupied, which helps stabilize neighborhoods and make sure that housing resources are being used efficiently.
So it's not just about legal theory, it's about creating a rental market that works better for everyone.
Exactly. And it also highlights how the law can be a tool for promoting fairness and preventing one side from taking advantage of the other.
I think that's a really important point. Summer v. Criddle wasn't just about settling a dispute between one landlord and one tenant.
Mm-hmm.
It was about establishing a principle that would protect the rights of countless people in the future.
It speaks to the power of legal precedent and how it can shape the way we live and interact with each other. It's a reminder that the law can be a force for positive change.
Okay, so we've talked about the lasting impact of Summer v. Criddle, but you mentioned earlier that there are still some unanswered questions in areas where the law is evolving.
You're right, there are. There's a lot of nuance out there in areas where the legal landscape is shifting.
Give us an example.
Well, one of the biggest ongoing debates is how the duty to mitigate applies to commercial leases. Remember, Summer v. Criddle focused specifically on residential leases.
Right. So does that mean commercial landlords don't have a duty to mitigate?
It's definitely not that simple. Some courts have extended the duty to mitigate to commercial leases, while others haven't been so willing. There are good arguments to be made on both sides.
What are some of the things courts consider when deciding whether to apply the duty to mitigate in a commercial setting?
Often they look at the specific language of the lease agreement itself. The level of sophistication of the parties involved. Are we talking about seasoned businesses or individuals?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the unique circumstances of the case. Commercial leases tend to be more complex than residential leases, and the parties often have greater resources and more bargaining power.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Definitely not.
Oh.
And then you have the question of how the duty to mitigate works with other legal principles, like the doctrine of anticipatory repudiation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where one party basically signals they're not going to live up to their end of the bargain even before they actually breach the contract.
Okay, that sounds complicated.
It can get pretty complicated, but it's an area where we're likely to see more legal developments as courts continue to grapple with how to apply the duty to mitigate in these more complex scenarios.
We're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive on Summer v. Criddle.
A fascinating case for sure.
We've really covered a lot, haven't we?
Yeah.
The whole story, how the court came to its decision, and the impact Summer v. Criddle still has on renting today.
It's amazing how relevant it remains, even after almost 50 years.
I know, right? But before we finish up, I think it's worth thinking about why exactly this case is so important.
Yeah, good point. It's not just some random legal footnote.
Right. So what makes Summer v. Criddle so pivotal even now?
Well, one thing that stands out is how it changed the way we think about landlord-tenant law.
In what way?
It shifted things away from a purely property-based approach
mm-hmm.
and moved toward one that recognized the contractual nature of leases.
Ah, so that's where that idea comes from.
Right. And that idea had a huge ripple effect.
Yeah.
It influenced legal decisions and even legislation all over the country.
So Summer v. Criddle really set a precedent.
It did. It was a real turning point.
And it's a perfect example of how the law can adapt to keep up with the times.
Absolutely. Before Summer v. Criddle, things were often stacked in favor of landlords.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But this case brought some balance back to the equation.
Right. It ensured that both sides have responsibilities.
Exactly. It's a good reminder that legal doctrines aren't set in stone.
They need to evolve.
Right. They have to evolve to reflect what's fair and what makes sense in the real world.
And the court in Summer v. Criddle recognized that clinging to these outdated property concepts just didn't make sense in the context of modern leases.
They were like, come on, folks, time to catch up.
Exactly. And that's a big part of why this case is still relevant today. It set a precedent that continues to shape the rights and responsibilities of landlords and tenants alike. Couldn't agree more. And it's also a great example of how legal principles can have a real, tangible impact on people's lives.
Okay, so how so?
Well, the duty to mitigate encourages landlords to keep their units occupied, right?
Sure.
And that helps to stabilize neighborhoods.
Interesting.
And it helps make sure that housing resources are being used efficiently.
So it's not just about the legal theory. It's about creating a rental market that works better for everyone.
Precisely. It's about fairness, too. It's about using the law to make sure one side doesn't take advantage of the other.
Right. And I think that's a really important point.
Yeah.
Summer v. Creedell wasn't just about this one dispute between a landlord and a tenant. It was about establishing a principle to protect people in the future.
Absolutely. It really highlights the power of legal precedent and how it can shape the way we live and interact with each other.
It's a reminder that the law can be a force for positive change.
I like that. It can be a force for good.
Okay, so we've talked about the lasting impact of Summer v. Crickle,
mm-hmm.
but you mentioned earlier that there are still some unanswered questions in areas where the law is evolving.
Right. There are still some gray areas.
Like what?
Well, a big debate right now is how the duty to mitigate applies to commercial leases. Remember, Summer v. Crickle focused specifically on residential leases.
Right. So does that mean commercial landlords are off the hook when it comes to mitigating damages?
It's not that straightforward.
Oh, really?
Some courts have said yes, the duty to mitigate applies to commercial leases too.
Okay.
But others have been more hesitant. It's a real point of contention.
So what are courts looking at when they're trying to decide this?
A few things. They often look at the specific language of the lease agreement itself. Mm-hmm. And they consider the level of sophistication of the parties involved. Are we talking about big companies or individuals? And then, of course, they consider the unique circumstances of the case.
So it's complicated.
Yeah, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation. Commercial leases tend to be more complex than residential leases, and the parties often have more resources and more bargaining power.
I see. And that makes it harder to apply a simple rule.
Exactly. Plus, there's the question of how the duty to mitigate interacts with other legal principles.
Oh, right.
Like the doctrine of anticipatory repudiation.
Now, that sounds like a whole other can of worms.
It is. It basically means one party is saying, I'm not going to fulfill my end of the bargain, even before they actually break the contract.
So things can get pretty messy.
They can. But that's law for you. Always some new wrinkle to iron out.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into Summer v. Crittle. We've explored its history, the reasoning behind the decision, and its long-lasting impact.
It's a case with real staying power.
And it's a great example of how the law isn't static. It's constantly being shaped by new circumstances and interpretations.
Right. And that means we all have a role to play. Lawyers, judges, landlords, tenants.
Everyone.
We need to make sure the law continues to serve the needs of a fair and just society.
Well said. And thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Summer v. Crittle.
My pleasure.
Hopefully you found it informative and maybe learned a thing or two about the ever-evolving world of landlord-tenant law.
There's always something new to discover.
That's right. And remember, the next time you sign a lease, whether it's for an apartment or a business, the principles we discussed today are still at work shaping the rights and responsibilities on both sides.
It's a case that continues to make a difference.
Absolutely. So until next time, keep those legal minds sharp, and we'll see you on our next deep dive.